Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast.
I'm your host, Gary Fox. We sent our products into QVC in America. They emailed us back and we got a meeting, and myself and my husband flew over and we met them. And in that meeting, they told us, yeah, we love you, so when do you want to come on air? And I looked at poor Hika and I went, you want us on air? Are you sure? Yeah. Seriously?
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I'm your host, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment is a weekly podcast. It goes out every Thursday at 6 a.m. where I sit down and chat to some of Ireland's best and most interesting entrepreneurs. This week, we chat to Sonia Deasy. Sonia and her husband set up Pestle & Mortar 5 years ago. And when you listen to the story, just bear that in mind. It's only been 5 years. When I listened back to Sonia's interview, it was actually hard to understand the scale at which they'd grown their business so quickly. They're now a global cosmetics brand with a turnover expected this year of 6 million euro. 6 million after 5 years. Speaking to Sonia, one thing struck me is that I think Sonia and her husband could have turned their hand to pretty much any business and made a success of it. Sometimes you meet entrepreneurs and they have a steel or they have that extra factor in them that you just know whatever they would have chosen to have done, they would have made a success of it. It's a really wide-ranging chat. We chat a lot about how they transitioned from their old business into their new business, how they knew when the time was right, how they scaled it down and how they scaled it up, how they manage running a business as a partnership and also a marriage. So there's a huge amount of value in this for a lot of entrepreneurs. I had a great time doing this podcast. I hope you enjoy the episode. If you do, please share it on social media. Tag Sonia, Pestle & Mortar, and myself, Mr. Gary Fox. And I will see you next Thursday at 6 a.m. for another great interview. Thanks for listening. Sonia, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Gary. I'm happy to be here.
And I've made the mistake again of chatting to you for far too long. So, welcome. I suppose give people a kind of a quick background on yourself and the company.
I am the co-founder of, along with my husband Pork, of Pestle & Mortar. So we're a skincare company. We were established nearly 4.5 years ago. We've got 8 products, and our skincare is, we combine natural ingredients together with science so that our products are active and effective. And also it's a simple skincare solution, so easy to understand and easy to use.
So is your background in skincare? Is that where you always working?
No, my background is, so my husband is a portrait photographer. So prior to setting up Pestle & Mortar, we actually ran our own portrait photography studio. So I'm married 15 years now.
Okay, you just think about that for a second.
Yes, so after I graduated from college, I studied, I've got an arts degree from UCD. I worked in my own family's business, which was clothing, wholesale and importing. So I was a buyer in that business. When I got married, I joined my husband's family business. So we actually bought his parents out of their business. They retired quite young. They were in their early 50s. And both myself and my husband ran our portrait photography studio. So it was a high-end portrait photography studio where we printed and framed and finished family portraits, families and children. But from there, we started traveling around the world educating professional photographers. So we used to speak a lot at photography conferences, not so much on how to take a portrait, but on how to run a successful portrait studio. So you find in creative businesses, a lot of creative people aren't, they're not, you know, they don't like the number side of their business. But we, when we had our portrait studio, we were really focused on the numbers and the profits in that business. And we were recognized by that, by our peers in the industry. So they discovered that our studio was a very profitable, very well-run studio. So we were always asked to speak about how we ran our studio and our business model.
Okay, I was going to ask you, how did you start speaking? Like, how did that come about?
My husband was a member of professional photographers in America. So PPA, that's one of, that is the biggest professional photographers association in the world. And it was there that he came into contact with a lady called Anne Monteith, who she used to coach the professional photographers there on the numbers of their business. So she had a relationship with the Irish professional photographers here in Ireland. And she loved Ireland, so she used to travel here a lot. And on one of her trips, she visited our studio, and we divulged and showed her all of our numbers and our figures. And she when she got back to America, then she wrote about us, and she wrote about this Irish studio run by a couple, and how well they ran the business, and that they were a very profitable studio, as opposed to a lot of other studios that she saw at that time. Mm. And it was from when she wrote that article, we got asked to speak.
Amazing.
The first place we got asked to speak was in São Paulo in Brazil.
Oh, wow.
In front of an audience of 2,000 people.
I thought you were going to say Athlone or Mullingar.
It was all international speaking. So from that one gig in São Paulo, we got asked to speak. We never went looking for speaking engagements. We just got asked to speak everywhere. Literally, we traveled all around America, Germany, France.
That's incredible. Just from that.
Yeah, just from that one talk. Yeah.
It's incredible though how being open often leads to far more, because everyone's so secretive, especially here in Ireland. That's why I love doing the podcast, because I think the old adage was, you know, oh, don't be telling people now. Everyone will be at it. You know, if they know how good it is, everyone will be doing it. But it's often, it's the best entrepreneurs are the most open.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I believe there are no secrets. You know, if I want to find out something, I'm going to find it out.
Especially now. Especially now, I can Google you and find out exactly, what's happening.
Exactly, yeah. So it was from there, from traveling around the world, educating professional photographers, that my eyes were opened when our focus in photography was portrait photography. So we were photographing, normal everyday moms with families and, the dads. And I didn't really see so much of the glamorous end, which was photographing models, but when we were traveling, I did get to see that.
Okay.
So at photography conferences, there would be commercial photographers photographing models. And it was there that I saw, before the models were photographed, the makeup artist would prep their skin using creams and serums with hyaluronic acid.
Okay.
And the skin looked absolutely amazing. And these women, these models, they didn't have particularly good skin. Their skin, because they're always, they travel a lot. They use a lot of makeup.
I get you, yeah.
They might not remove it correctly. So their skin, it wasn't just naturally amazing, but it was a lot of the creams and products that the makeup artists were using that made their skin look luminous and glowing from, when I was looking behind the lens.
Mm.
And I realized this, and this was in America. So, so I discovered that they were using products that had hyaluronic acid present in them. So I do have a sister who's a biochemist.
Okay. It's all starting to click into place now.
So I spoke to her about hyaluronic acid as an ingredient in skincare and does it work? And she explained to me, yes, it does work. It's one of those proven ingredients. So I went about and did my research. So I bought I spent thousands and thousands on hyaluronic.
Purely for research.
Yeah, serums with hyaluronic.
And was this for yourself? Was this something you're like, I'm going to get this for myself?
Them. I'd love to use them and make my skin look that way. But when I, the more products I bought, the more disappointed I got.
Okay.
So I would be a very tactile person, so I would be very aware of the feeling of something on my skin. So if I put a cream on my skin, the texture and the sensory touch of that cream is really important to me.
Mm.
So if it feels sticky or tacky or I can feel it on my skin, I can't wear it.
Okay.
So I thought maybe I'm just extremely fussy. So I was buying creams that were, from 30 euro to 300 euro.
Wow.
And I couldn't find anything that I really absolutely went, oh my God, I love this. Yeah, I'm going to use it every day. And I really enjoy the experience of this cream. So Then I had an idea that I'm going to create my own. I couldn't find one that I loved, so I set about creating my own. So that journey took between 18 months and 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know,
what was that process? Like, how did you start going, okay, I'm looking at all these jars and they all look like really confusing, like a million ingredients. Like, where did you begin?
Yeah, so, you know, I started with ingredient research. And also I got my sister to help me, but we did engage biochemists in a laboratory.
Wow.
And we worked together with them. And then once we got the first samples, we gave them out to friends and family. And, you know, it was a process though. Mm. It wasn't the first sample. I think it was the 9th or 10th sample.
Okay.
That we knew, okay, we hit. This is it, yeah. And from that first sample, then we put it into production and we haven't looked back since.
And were you still working in the portrait studio at the time?
Yeah, so we really only closed our portrait studio 2 years ago. So myself and my husband work together. We've got 5 children. Our portrait studio was our main source of income. Mm. So we had to make sure that we had enough income to support our family before we could close our portrait studio.
That's a big...
Yeah.
Literally, before I met you here, I met a friend of mine who's considering moving into his own business. And we had this exact conversation. Mm. We sat down and he was asking me, how did I transition off full-time employment?
Yes.
Now, for me, it was just me and my fiance at the time. But how did you sit down and break that down? Because I think that's a barrier for a lot of people.
Yeah, so I suppose I do come from an entrepreneurial background. My parents were self-employed. My husband, his parents were self-employed. So I think I grew up with that spirit inside me. I never, after I graduated from college, I never worked for anybody else. So I never really understood. I never had the understanding of this is your income and this is your set income for a month. I was more used to, times are good. I can get this much, times are bad. I better, you know, tighten my belt per se. So that's the way I grew up.
Mm.
And I think for a lot of, I think that's the hardest transition for somebody that doesn't come from that background. Yeah, I'm not saying that you can't do it. Of course, it's achievable. But I think that that is the hardest transition. But I grew up that way. So I didn't have to transition.
You knew no other way.
I didn't know any other way, yeah. So, but also myself and my husband, we eat from the same pot. So it's the same pot. So if our business isn't going well, then guess what? Neither of us have a wage.
Yeah.
But you know what? When we closed our studio, we knew we had a very, very strong business behind us. And we're not stupid. We have 5 children and we're responsible adults.
Sorry, kids, Cocoa Pops again today.
Yeah, exactly. But so I think, you know, absolutely, I'd be the first one to say to somebody that does come from a salaried background and has always worked for somebody else, that, I mean, they are the real risk takers. I probably am not, because that's the way I grew up.
Did you and your husband sit down and were like, okay, at X figure, we'll go? Or was it more of a gradual process in terms of you'd hit a benchmark, you'd be like, oh, this is going quite well, and then you hit another benchmark? Or was it like... How did you balance the both? I think that was the main question.
So as our cosmetic business was increasing in turnover and revenue, naturally our portrait studio was decreasing because we didn't have the time. Yeah. So our focus, it was a natural progression. What happened was, the bigger our cosmetic business grew, our focus has shifted. Yeah. So as the cosmetic business grew, our portrait studio declined.
Okay.
And that was, you know, we did make that decision though, because also for us with Pestle and Mortar, it is a global business.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas our portrait studio, it could never be global, yeah? And we could never scale it, yeah? So we were at the top of our game in our portrait studio. We were known. We had clients that flew in from all around the world to have their portraits taken with us. So we knew we had reached the top of our game. Mm-hmm. There was nowhere else for us to go, yeah? So we knew that. We knew we needed to do something else, yeah?
It's so interesting that theme crops up quite a lot, that people are at the very top of their game are willing to tear it all down and go again.
Yeah.
It's so interesting though, that hunger, I think that's innate in entrepreneurs, because I've chatted to a lot of people, and you often see that. It's not when times are bad that people are like, oh, quick, we need to do something. It's just when times are so good.
Yeah. Our portrait studio was called DC Photographic. It was our namesake, but it couldn't go global because it was, you know, my husband was the portrait. He was the photographer. We did employ around 6 to 8 staff at any one time, but it was a very hands-on business. So when our clients walked through the door, they expected Park to take the pictures and myself to, I used to do all the selling in there. So it was very, very hands-on.
There's so many hours in the day. I mean, you can only take X amount of clients. Exactly. And what gave you that global focus? What was it when you started speaking abroad, or you seem like a very globally minded entrepreneur? Like, what gave you that?
I think it was when we traveled around speaking at photography conferences. We really understood how small the world is, especially with e-commerce. And also from traveling, you know, you go to China, like Shanghai has a population of 40 million. That's one city.
It's humbling.
We live in a country with a population of 4.5 million. Yeah. I mean, why would you not try and go global? It just doesn't make it, you know, I mean, it's naturally the next step for us. And I mean, I also think, you know, we're launching in the Chinese market now next month. We have native speaking Chinese in us that sit in our business in Kildare. So we're not, you know, we're not afraid to embrace these markets and learn that culture, you know, and sell to the Asian market the way they want to be sold to. And it's, you know, it's a whole, it's such an exciting experience and process and learning experience for us. And it's really exciting when you sit down and look at the size of that market.
Do you get scared?
No, I get excited.
You seem excited.
I can't wait to
go. No. I think you're going to run out the door right now.
Don't get that. No, not at all.
So take me back to, so you and your sister were developing this, and then you were like, okay, I think we've got sample 9, 10, I think we're on something here. Was that an expensive process to go from sample 0 to sample 10?
It was expensive in the respect of that was all of my time. So I was no longer available to work in our portrait studio and put my mind in there for revenue. So, you know, when you look at it that way, that my time was taken like that. I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't at my full revenue earning potential then. Yeah. So from that respect, yes. And then research and development does cost money. And then, you know, you have travel expenses, you have creative expenses, the design, the packaging. But luckily, my husband is very creative. So we didn't, you know, we didn't have huge outlays for pestle and mortar at the very beginning. Because we had a lot of the knowledge, not knowledge in the cosmetic skincare business, but a lot of knowledge creatively of how to put a brand together, and how to tell your brand story, how to launch a website, and also a lot of knowledge in the digital marketing sector.
Where did the name, branding, where did the name come from? I absolutely love it.
I come from 6 generations of medicine men. So my grandfather, he was the medicine man in India. And my uncle, he still practices in the same spot today. So a pestle and mortar is, as you all probably know, it's an implement that you use to grind down herbs and spices. And it's an implement that my grandfather used in his business. And it's still withstood the test of time. And it's a simple but effective implement.
I
think it's the perfect name.
Yeah, because often the name is the hardest.
Yes.
But when you look at you, it's so funny. When you look at your brand and your website, it just all just works. And, you know, often that's the hardest. And that can stump people. That can stop people starting even.
Yeah. So, and then from that respect, I suppose that we were lucky that my husband has all that, he has all that creative knowledge and ability. And I don't, I mean, I'm creative in other ways,
yeah.
Yes, but I wouldn't be able to tell you, does this look, yeah, okay, I might say I like the look of this, but I don't know the reasons why.
Yeah,
or the
I'm
technical
same, yeah.
aspects of yeah. that design, but he understands that, okay, right, yeah, it's nice, but technically it's not correct. Or,
yeah.
So
you know if you like it or you don't
yeah,
like it.
But I don't
yeah,
know
same.
Anything outside of that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know the reasons why it's nice.
Okay. But you can break down the process
good.
And you can go, right, we need to do this,
yeah.
and this. How a husband and wife team as entrepreneurs is that let's broach that. Is
yeah.
that a challenge?
No, I think the first thing I think is if you think you can't work with your partner, then don't. So that will be the worst thing you could do. So we're lucky because we don't do the same things in the business.
Okay.
And I will never undermine his decisions and he will never undermine my decisions. Well, not in public anyway,
yeah.
but you know.
When you're watching Netflix that night, it's like, I gotta stop this for a second.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I mean, I think we obviously get on very well and we get on working very well. He's good at things that I'm not good at and I'm good at things that he's not good at.
Okay.
And we respect that about each other. And I suppose he also, you know, I with Pestle & Mortar, I am the face of the brand and he's constantly pushing me.
Okay.
And constantly, you know, because the business is growing so quickly now and I have full support from him and the whole team to, you know, we're at the stage now where I am able to, you know, come here and do the podcast, but I don't have to worry about anything else
yeah.
for that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, I think, you know, I do know some couples that work together that shouldn't work together. So I think it either works or it doesn't. And if
okay.
it doesn't work, it's a very bad idea to work together.
It's like any partnership,
yeah.
I guess. It just
yeah.
magnifies it more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And take me back then to sample 9 or 10.
Mm.
What happened then? You just, okay, we
yeah.
have it. I like it. It feels great.
Yes.
What was the next process?
The next part was the packaging and the branding, yeah, and the name. So the last thing we came up with was the name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, the name came about when I explained Porig that, you know, because the products come from natural ingredients combined with science, and I grew up with in a heritage of natural healing. So when I'm one of 6 children, so if any of us were ever sick, my parents would remedy it naturally.
Okay.
So it was inbuilt in me without me really knowing.
It wasn't a forced thing. You
yeah,
didn't have
so
to sit down and go,
yeah,
oh, what are we going to do now?
It's kind of a lifestyle.
Yeah.
So it was, it's like goes from the food we eat. It starts at the very, very beginning. So my idea for the brand is that it will eventually become a lifestyle brand.
Okay.
And that's where we were sitting down in the kitchen one day and having our dinner with the kids, and I saw the Pestle & Mortar on my worktop because I love cooking.
Okay.
And I said, what about Pestle & Mortar? Because my grandfather and, you know, the brand is inspired by him and the products are inspired by natural healing. And I said to Porik, is it too long for,
yeah.
you know, for creative
yeah, yeah, of course,
or
yeah.
will it work? Or,
yeah,
you know,
of course.
Yeah,
he could think
yeah,
of design.
Too
going,
many
oh,
letters,
yeah.
And then he had a look, and he went. I thought, oh no, he's going to tell me there's too many letters in it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Is the URL gone? Can we buy
yeah.
the site?
All the
know,
things you think about.
Things,
yeah,
they're
nowadays,
the first,
yeah.
They're the first things we did, and then it worked, and you know, we got the URL, we got the site.
Was that available, or did you have to buy it off someone?
It wasn't available, but we bought it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So and it worked. So. That was the name.
And off you went.
And off we went, yes.
And so got the name.
Yeah, so we packaged,
put some packaging together.
We packaged it, yeah. And then we started marketing it, really. That was the very first thing we did. Marketing, I have a friend. She has her own PR company. And I gave her a call. And I've known her since I was 3. And she came in and she said, okay, honestly, we never worked with a PR company in our lives before. We didn't really know anything about it. And she said to me, okay, look, I have a list of, I think it was 22 Irish press and media. I'll send the product out to them and we'll see. And I said, all right.
Okay. I sent a sample out.
Yeah,
said, okay.
So we sent the samples out and the feedback was unbelievable.
Really?
Yeah.
So you didn't have any shops yet? You didn't have any, you have an online presence at this stage?
We had our website built.
Yeah, okay.
Just that, the week we sent it out. So nothing, like we just sent it out and the feedback came back and it was unbelievable. So from editor to TV personality, they just couldn't believe it. They were saying, best product I've ever used.
Wow.
Absolutely amazing. Worked straight away. It's really effective. Not irritating. Love it. So from there, we got featured on Exposé. And when I say feature, it was just literally a picture of the product, a new Irish brand launched, Pestle and Mortar. We had only one product. So we launched the brand with one product, our Pure Hyaluronic Serum, and available to buy on their website.
Mm.
And immediately we started getting sales.
Wow.
So
instantly,
anyone,
from that first
instantly,
week. That's phenomenal.
And anybody that knows, people that have online stores, they will understand how difficult it is to actually sell online.
Mm.
So, and we knew because we got sales straight away. That and we knew that it was difficult to get sales online, so it was pretty much immediate. It started.
There's online store owners all around the world now crying, listening to this.
But this wasn't our first online store, so we did have another business when we were educating professional photographers. We set up a business called SeamlessPhoto.com, and that had photography accessories like light boxes.
That's ringing a bell on me. I think I was on that back in the day. Yeah, yeah.
So, and they were branded Seamless Photo, and that was online only.
Okay.
And, you know, we understood how difficult it was to sell online. Mm. You know, in that business, it was successful, but we never got sales immediately. It didn't just happen like that. So we knew
special.
That this wasn't normal.
Mm.
Yeah, so we understood, okay, this is special. This is just not normal, yeah. So from there, from the online, once the online sales started happening, I started getting calls from different journalists, like the journalists from the Gloss magazine. That's a quarterly magazine that's published in the Irish Times.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it's very, very well renowned.
Mm.
We got an article published there. We got a phone call from Brian Thomas, a phone call from Arnott's, a phone call from Liberty in London.
Coming to you?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, and do you think that was purely driven by the media? Obviously, the product stood alone. It stood behind itself.
The reviews on the products were so good that they couldn't be ignored.
Okay.
That's what I think. And I think that it was a little bit of the right place at the right time that hyaluronic acid was just trending. But we didn't know that.
Okay.
It was actually a trending product, yeah. So we were just a little bit ahead of the curve.
It's incredible, the factor. I like hearing you say that. It's incredible the factor luck will take in a business as well.
So the branding was right. The product was right. Mm. And the little bit of media that we got was right.
Mm.
Yeah.
But you'd worked on so many things up to that point.
Yeah.
I'm not like, oh, I have an idea. I'll just put up a website.
Yeah, we spent months getting our website together.
Yeah.
Doing the copy, writing all the copy, doing the photography. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So when you made your first couple of sales online, you're getting positive media coverage. When you sat down then, what was your next step? Did you think, right, we're going to go global, we're going to do a new product?
Originally, for Pestle and Mortar, we wanted it to be just an online store. We didn't really think that much far ahead, so we didn't really think that it would go into retail, We kind of thought naively that it could just be online, and we didn't think that there would be that much demand for it in retail stores, So after we started getting the online sales and the press and media coverage, we got calls from Brian Thomas and Arnott's and Liberty in London wanting to stock our product. So
what was that conversation when you're like, hang up the phone and you're like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but I think because we didn't come from this world, from the cosmetic world, we thought this was normal.
Okay.
I'm honestly not.
Okay, right.
Thought, right, this is what happens when you have a cosmetic brand. That's what we thought. So,
like, this is easy.
Yeah. Well, we just thought, oh, this is what happens when you have a cosmetic brand. You automatically get stocked in stores.
Like Brown Thomas.
So, I went and met the buyers, and the conversations were very successful, and we did launch in all of the stores. So we launched our brand in November 2014, so the end of the year. And the following May, we made a decision to do the cosmetics show in the RDS. And that's where it's like a cosmetic trade show where pharmacies or potential buyers and stockists will come.
Okay.
Yeah. So we had a little booth there, and we only had one product. So we had our pure hyaluronic serum sitting on a pedestal on a big high plinth at the show. And we picked up over 150 customers.
I have to make an admission. I read that in an article. And you know when you go back and you're like, wait, what? What was that like? What was the...
Again, we thought, all right, people love our product and this is normal. That's what we thought. Yeah, we thought, okay, all right, we have a good product. We've got a good brand. And obviously, there's a huge appetite for skincare. That's what we thought.
So you're six months in now.
Yeah, so we're 6 months in.
6 months officially launched. Okay.
Yeah, so we picked up 150 customers, wholesale customers, like stockists. Yeah. So after that, then we had to expand our team. At this time, there was only myself, Porik. We had hired one digital marketer, that was it. And we had one salesperson. So there's four of us.
Wow.
When we got all of these customers, we had to start we needed accounts. We needed.
Yeah. What about stock levels? That seems to be something with e-commerce stores, especially clothing stores, like people, like even like big places like Gymshark and stuff, regularly seem to sell out.
Yeah, so we did sell out. Yeah. Yeah, that did happen to us. And we're probably really only getting to grips with our stock levels now.
Wow.
Yeah, so we have sold out plenty of times.
That must be terrifying.
Due to poor stock management. But now we're in a place now where we have learned how to manage that stock much more efficiently.
Yeah.
And I suppose that only comes with, you know, we didn't emphasize the demand. We didn't know what the demand would be. So now we have a little bit more data from, you know, 4.5 years. So we can make, you know, judgment calls on inventory and stock now.
And when you're starting, how did you pick a number even to go, right, we're going to need 5,000? 100? Well, like, how do you know? Like, how do you figure?
Well, you know, when we were launching, obviously we believed in the brand. And we believed that the product would sell. And we believed that it was good enough to sell. And that customers would buy it and that it would be repeated. So we did. I think we launched with 10,000 pieces.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's quite a lot.
It's quite a lot. Yeah. Yeah. But we believed in it. Yeah. And we believed we could sell that many.
And when they arrived, what was the feeling when you saw, like, did you ship and pack it yourselves, or did you get a third party to ship it out?
We handle all of our own distribution.
Okay.
So we only work with distributors that are non-English speaking countries. So we distribute all of our own product here in Ireland and in the UK and in Europe. But we've recently signed with distributor in Russia, the UAE, China, Indonesia. So we do distribute, but I think for us it was important that we controlled the product from start to finish, because with a new business, you need to be able to react quick. So you know, what if we decided, oh yeah, let's put this sachet in with that, or let's modify this, so we wanted it in the box this way, yeah, so we could control that process. So it's a little bit more difficult to control that process if you're dealing with third party. I think especially for just for a startup business, you know, if we, you know, if we wanted to in the future, we might be able to outsource that if we wanted to. But I think at the beginning, it, for us, it was very important to get everything together and moving from, you know, A to wherever the end place was, but that everyone was working on that from the very beginning.
Was that physically very demanding though, when you were like, obviously it just started an avalanche of orders, was that physically
We had a warehouse, we always had a warehouse person, packing the orders. We never, I suppose because we came from a business, we understood that if, you know, we needed to work on the business, not really in the business. So, you know, our time was not going to be utilized if we were stuck packing boxes. And we understood that from the very beginning. You know, if we want to run the business and scale it, we need to employ people.
It's very common, I think, mistake that a lot of people make. You end up, I've done it, lots of people I've chatted on the podcast have done it, they end up like grinding away for 3, 4, 5, 6 months before kind of getting their head up and going.
Do that in other areas of the business. So like in, you know, for the creative end, we did that a good bit ourselves, because you can't have everything instantly. You know, the business has to grow in order to employ that person, in order to do that, to do that task. But a lot of the labor-intensive jobs we didn't do, we employed somebody to do that,
I suppose that's your experience shining through there. You knew from previous businesses, it's not your first rodeo, you know where your time is spent. What was the feeling then when you saw 10,000 arrive to the warehouse?
Well, they arrived, I mean, it was, how are we going to shift these? Because when they arrived, we didn't have any of the media. You know, it happened once they arrived, it happened a few weeks later. So, I mean, obviously we were delighted. The product looked amazing and we were so excited. But we were nervous that, okay, worst case scenario, we're going to get stuck with 10,000 units of syrup.
Lifetime supply for you?
Yes.
Oh, it's an upside?
Yes. So that's the worst case scenario. That's the worst possible thing that could happen here. I mean,
so then we'll skip forward. You're in the RDS. You just got 120, was it?
Over 150 customers.
150 customers. Yeah. What happened then?
So we started getting the stock into the retailers and also looking at the point of sale and the merchandising. And we did that from the very beginning because we also understood that our product has to look well within those stores. And we come from a creative background and came from a creative business, so that would be very important to us. How is the brand showcased once it leaves our place? And that falls within the guidelines of how we want it showcased. So from the very beginning, we always looked at the point of sale and how it was displayed in the stores. So, you know, we understood that, you can get quick, fast sales, but that's not what we were after. We're after, you know, creating a brand that people will come back and repurchase, that is aesthetically pleasing. In the stores.
And how did you learn how to do that? How did you go, point of sale, everyone has to be this size? Because you've been to so many shops now and it's stuff everywhere. How did you know, okay, we're going to need this, that, and the other?
It was a lot of guesswork and we didn't get it right from the beginning. You know, our point of sale keeps on changing and keeps on evolving. You know, I'm not saying we got it right, but we did have some form of point of sale.
You understood.
Yeah, we understood that we needed something, so we're just, you know, we're in actually in the process now of hiring a visual merchandiser, you know. So that because we understand that our brand has to be translated exactly the way we want it. In order for it to be translated the way we want it to be in store, we have to put that effort into it or it never will be. So we've got reps on the road as well that call in. They might, you know, they make sure they work towards, you know, the drawings of how the product should look in store.
So, yeah, you're keeping control of the brand.
Yeah.
And then when you go outside of Ireland, so you launched in all the pharmacies, and I'm sure that brought its own complexities. But then outside of Ireland, how did that kind of start to grow? Because your growth outside of Ireland seems to have been explosive.
Yeah, so we're in all of the Harvey Nichols in the UK, and we're launching actually on the 23rd of this month in 45 Marks & Spencer stores in the UK.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
Exciting.
Yeah, so I think we've learned from, you know, we managed to put really good point of display into Marks & Spencer stores. And they actually told us last week that we were one of the easiest brands to work with, that they got it, you know, we got everything finished quicker than most brands would. So, I mean, we were delighted.
It's high praise.
Yeah. So it's going into 45 stores in the UK. 2 weeks' time.
Fantastic.
And all of the point of display, the merchandising is—it's all organised and it looks really, really well. So,
do you get a buzz? You must.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, so we're going over. The official launch is in September, so we're doing six events around the launch over 3 days.
Great, yeah.
I'll also appear on QVC in London, the shopping channel,
because
we sell there regularly as well.
You preempted one of my next questions.
Yeah, so in September I'll appear on QVC as well in conjunction with the launch, because QVC and Marks & Spencer's, they kind of share the same customer.
Oh, interesting. Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And how did the QVC then, if you don't tell that story, that's a really great story. I think that's how I heard about you first. I think I heard a press article ages ago, a long time ago. I think that's how I first read about it. I was like, that's so unusual to see an Irish company making such a dent.
For the American market, so we're in all of the Bloomingdale stores in America. So for the American market, we actually went to America before we went to the UK, before we went anywhere. And I don't really know how that happened, but it just happened.
Yeah. Scratch my next question.
So we kind of had a family friend in New York who lives in New York. He's in real estate. He asked me to send him over some of the serum. And he's one of my brother's best friends. And we sent it over to him, and he gave it out to, you know, a lot of these wealthy clients, their wives,
and
they loved it. So he got loads of feedback, and he said, look, I mean, I think you should look at America as a market. And we said, all right, sure.
Why not? Everything else is going pretty well.
So we did. So we kind of, myself and my husband looked at America, and we kind of thought, we did a little bit of research, and we stumbled upon QVC in America. And we kind of looked into it, and we discovered that, you know, it's a really good platform to launch a brand.
And what year was this?
This was 2015. So it was the year. And we got on QVC then in 2017 in America. Yeah. So we discovered that it was a really good launch pad. Mm. So whether you make sales or not, it's, you know what, it's actually free
advertising,
marketing and publicity. Yeah. So I can't remember the figures of how many viewers they have, but it's millions.
Yeah.
Like it's 100 million or something crazy.
Yeah.
So we thought, oh my God, imagine if we can get in front of that many eyes for 7 minutes.
Yeah. 7 minutes is a long time.
7 minutes and sell your product. Imagine what that could do for your exposure in that market. And that's really all we thought. We thought, all right, this might be, actually, it might be the cheapest way for us to do it.
I love it. Yeah.
Kind of what we thought, yeah. So we sent our products into QVC in America, to the buyers, into Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania. That's where they're based. And they called us back and said, yeah, would you like to come and see us? And they gave us a meeting. And honestly, we thought, this is kind of normal. So they emailed us back and we got a meeting, and myself and my husband flew over and we met them, and we presented our brand, and I told them my backstory and our brand story. And in that meeting, they told us, yeah, we love you, so when do you want to come on air? And I looked at Pori and I went, you want us on air? Are you sure? Yeah. Seriously? And they said, yeah. So that's, but now, from the time they said yes, it took us 18 months to to get the products ready, pass all their tests and get on
okay.
it. Took us 18
so
months.
So that's a long time. What
it's
is that above then?
A long time. So they have all this, they're very litigious. So you have to tick all the boxes and it does cost money. Your product has to pass tons of tests. Like QVC stands for quality, convenience and value. That's what it stands for.
Okay.
So you have to tick all of those boxes and they're very litigious in America. So,
so do you have to do more tests then?
No, because our product is manufactured in the EU, we fall under cosmetic manufacturing in the EU is the strictest, one of the strictest in the world.
Okay.
Apart from Canada, we're kind of the same as the Canadians. So our products are, by default of being manufactured in Europe, are the safest.
Interesting.
So we would have passed all of those tests.
Right. Yet,
but there's other tests that they require. Also, how you speak about your product on air. So you're not allowed to say certain words.
So you personally go on?
Yeah.
Oh,
I went on, yeah.
Okay.
So, but I was trained for like 10 months every Tuesday. I had a Skype training. Yeah,
that's intense.
For an hour, and I was only going on with, by this stage we had three products, but we were going on with one product, and it was our most expensive product in our range, which was our retinoid night oil, and it was selling for $99.
Okay.
So we were thinking, okay, you know, it was quite expensive the product, so we were kind of hedging our bets that possibly it might not sell, it might be too expensive, or, you know, so there was a lot of things going against us, but also for us too.
Mm.
So it took us 18 months to pass all the tests and tick all the boxes.
That's a huge length of time.
Yeah. And then all the training and the preparation that I had to go through to actually appear on air. So.
And then they're doing that every day for hundreds of tens of 20 to
Incredible. It's crazy. Like in Philadelphia, like the QVC studios, it's all robotics. So it's all controlled in the camera room upstairs.
Oh, wow.
There's no cameramen actually on the floor. No, but in London, there's cameramen on the floor.
That's surreal.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's crazy. I'm not, you know, like most people, yeah, I did have some experience in a photography studio.
Yeah, of course.
But not in a filming studio in front of TV. I've never, ever been on TV before.
And did the whole process take long then to record?
It's live.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's live.
No pressure.
No. So not only do you have to...
It's live.
It's live TV. So it's really like I've never, ever been under such severe pressure in my entire life.
That's hard to imagine.
Yeah. So it's live.
Because you come across as such a calm customer. That's so cool, calm. But I think anybody would be shook by that.
Yeah, no, you really, I never forget it. And especially in the US, I mean, it's all razzmatazz and Ritz. You walk in there and they are...
You're on.
They're so confident. Mm. And you see all of the other brands before they go on and they're like full of confidence.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're, you know... And I'm not, you know, I'm probably a little bit quieter, than most people.
Yeah.
And, and they're very well-established brands and well-known and well-able to
probably
speak
done
and
it
present,
over and over
yeah,
and over.
And well-able to sell as well, because I think it's in their nature,
definitely.
More so than in our nature.
Yeah.
So before I went on, I was so nervous. I nearly didn't go on. So,
really?
Yeah, I said, I don't know if I can do this. I really don't know if I can do this. And they went, Sonia, get on the stage now. Literally, they had to push me on and say, you know, you've prepared, you're ready.
Yeah.
Go for it.
And is there someone there with you? Is there someone
so
like
there's
a presenter?
Host. Okay. There's a host and then I'm called the guest.
Okay.
And I have a host. So they're very good though. I mean, the host's job is to sell it.
Yeah.
Sell your
okay.
product. That's her job or his job. And they're there to guide you and lead you. And they won't, you know, they won't let you fall.
Yeah.
They won't. If they think you're struggling, they would pick you back up. Yeah. So when I was on, my slot, so it started, it was 7 minutes. But in America, they're really like cutthroat. If you're not selling, so they will throw you off. After,
really?
Yeah, they'll throw you off after 3 minutes.
So are sales happening as you're there.
Live, yeah. Yeah.
And they're watching coming in and they're like, oh, and Sonia's not doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, and you have an earpiece as well in your ear.
It's like Dragon's Den on steroids.
Yeah. So you have an earpiece in your ear. You're standing beside the host and you've never met the host before. I met the host, I think, 10 minutes before I went on air.
Oh, wow. So we can't even have that kind of like...
Yeah, so I told her, like, literally on speed, like, this is my backstory, this is my brand, I'm 5 children, I'm a mother, I created this product because it's simple to use. Yeah, literally, yeah. I met her for 2 minutes before I went on. When you go on, you know, for our brand, the backstory was really important, yeah. And we had my grandfather's pestle and mortar, which is in my family for over 100 years, we flew it in. So when the sale started... I thought, you know, I was kind of thinking, God, maybe they're going to throw me off. Because they do. If you don't start getting sales, they throw you off.
That's so harsh.
Yeah. Yeah. They literally cut and then they move on to the next person. Yeah. So I actually got 8 minutes because at 7 minutes, we were selling so well. When you're on TV, you're looking at two monitors and you can see which one is on live and which one is coming up. So I could see she knew. She said to me, the host turned around to me at the 7 minute and she kind of whispered, you're going to sell out, we're keeping you on. Yeah, so keep on going, just keep speaking.
Keep talking.
Yeah, wow. So we sold out. Yeah, so we had the highest dollar per minute sale that night on Friday Night Beauty in the USA.
Friday night as well?
Friday Night Beauty.
My God.
In the USA. Less than, I think it's, I don't know, 2% of new brands sell out on their first airing. It's like, it's pretty much unheard of, yeah. So when I walked off set... all the presenters, everybody, they were high-fiving me and they were like screaming. They were just going, oh my God, like you really smashed it. And like, it was unbelievable.
You're like, this is normal. Yeah. This is another one of the situations where you're like.
But then I was kind of thinking, oh my God, like, look what we achieved. Yeah. And then I burst out crying. No. I was just going.
Probably all the emotion of the adrenaline and then the nerves.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So,
what a feeling,
though. And
there
was a brand there called Laura Geller Makeup. And she's quite a big, big, big brand. And she was actually there that evening. And she came up to me, which was really nice. She's the founder of that brand. And I think it's like a $200 million brand or something. And she came up to me that night and she said, you know, Sonia, you remind me of myself when I started.
Okay.
Which I thought was really nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll never, ever forget that experience, ever.
That's even hard to imagine.
Yeah.
That giant pressure and then just suddenly the release of achieving.
Yes.
Well, just celebrate.
So, you know, in QVC, because you're finished you don't get out of the studios at 11:30 and everything is closed in that area. But we did. We found somewhere and we went out. And, you know, but you're just like...
It's like you're playing a concert or something. It's just pretty intense.
Yeah.
And did that then, was that a kickoff point for you in America?
So, so we got into all of the Bloomingdale's then in America. Yeah.
On the back of that.
Yeah, on the back of that, So we do Cosmo Prof, which is another international cosmetic show in Vegas, and we're doing it again this year. So we did it last year, and we're in talks with some of the big retailers at the moment in the US. Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
2014, the end of 2014.
Yeah.
This is mid-2019.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you keep a perspective on it all? How do you kind of like... Because it seems like you're going at a million miles an hour.
I don't know. I mean, I'm a mother. I've got 5 children and kids will keep you grounded.
You know, they don't care.
They don't care. You know, I mean, they, you know, still their homework has to be done. They're, you know, they're in the Gaeltacht. The older two are away for 3 weeks and... You know, that type of stuff keeps you grounded. And also I live quite near my parents and I see them a lot. And they're very simple people. I've got 5 siblings and they'll put you in your place pretty quickly. I'm the 4th child of 6. Yeah, so I'm number 4. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, I'm I take a few. They slag me a lot, you know.
Look, like, I think that's the true standard of success in Ireland. When your friends or your peers are slagging you, you're like, I'm doing something right.
Yeah, so I have plenty of people around me that keep me grounded. And also, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what we're doing is we're running a successful business. Yes, I'm in the media quite a bit, but that is part of running the business. No, I mean, I think I'm grounded. I mean, my kids they keep me grounded. Yeah. And my husband.
Well, how do you balance everything?
How do I balance?
I think a lot of entrepreneurs, especially as you limit all your commitments, scale up, whether that's family or things like that, how do you find the balance? Is it regimented planning, or is it, how do you find that?
Because myself and my husband, we work together and we're so passionate about the business. Yeah, so we always talk about the business. So at home, we would talk about the business, and our children will know about the business, and they will say things like, you know, I could mention a brand and they'd say, oh, Mama, are they global like you? Are they going global? You know, the 8-year-old, they know all the terminology. Or they'd say, oh, did that that FSDU look well in that store? And, you know, the 10-year-old will go, oh, the freestanding display. You know, they know all the terminology.
Yeah.
And I suppose, like I grew up with it, they're going to grow up with it.
Mm.
So I think when you're self-employed and you run your own business, it's not about a balance. It's really a way of life.
Mm.
And that is the way we live our lives.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's nobody else that I could talk to about my business or about our business as much as my husband.
Yeah.
There's nobody else that would be on this earth that would listen to us. Because, you know, he would say to me sometimes, okay, right, we're not talking about that now, you know.
Okay.
But it always goes back to that.
Yeah.
But it's not that we enjoy it so much, and then, you know, with the kids, we don't work at the weekends. You know, if we travel, we're always home for the weekends, we don't work on Saturdays and Sundays, so we're always
that's real
there. And then also, if I'm not traveling, like today after here, you know, the younger three are in a camp, I'll collect them at 4 o'clock and bring them somewhere, or, you know, so there's a little bit of you know, if I can snap a few hours out when they're off, I will.
Yeah.
And if I can't, I can't. And they understand that. And, you know, they don't. Do I feel guilty? No, I don't. I'm providing them a better life.
Yeah.
I'm happy. They're happy. My husband's happy. So, I mean, are they suffering in any way? I don't think so. If you met them, you could make that judgment. But no, I don't think so.
Incredible.
So,
and you're just living the life.
Well, no. I don't know about living the life, but I'm trying to create a good life.
It strikes me like, though, that you're doing exactly what you want to be doing.
Yeah. So I am the type of person that I really don't do things that I don't like doing.
Yeah.
So, and I think I think most people know that about me as well.
Yeah.
So don't ask me. If I don't like doing something, I will delegate it. I'm very good at that.
Yeah. My wife says this to me all the time. She's like, you've a problem with power.
Yeah.
You've a problem with, like, being told what to do. I'm like, I just hate exactly the same. I just can't abide it.
Yeah, so I don't have any problem with that at all.
Yeah.
So I would say, okay, right, I will do this and I will enjoy doing this, but I'm not doing this because I absolutely 100% will resent doing it.
Mm.
So, like, I have a few rules where unless I absolutely have to travel, I don't travel. So unless I'm implicitly needed on that trip, I don't go. But I do have, I mean, I suppose that I'm lucky because my husband will, you know, on a lot of the commercial trips, he's there. So, you know, so I don't need to be there.
You have that balance.
I have that
balance.
You have
that. And you have someone you trust implicitly.
Exactly, implicitly. So I don't have to be there.
It's always one of those questions people hate. What's your next, what are you looking down the road at now? What excites you now in the next kind of 6 to 12 months?
For us, it's the Asian market. So we launched a .cn Chinese website. a couple of weeks ago, and we are signing, we're just about to sign with the distributor after 18 months or nearly 2 years of due diligence.
Wow.
So we're just getting ready now. We only decided yesterday that 100% this is it. So
was that on their side or your side?
Our side. So now, so my husband and our COO, they're just back from, I think, their fifth trip from China for over the last 2 years before meeting with distributors. So now we're like 110% sure, and we're ready. We're gearing up and we're getting ready to go. Like, we have a Chinese commercial manager sitting in the office, so we're ready.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And what sparked that?
The size of the market. And also in Asia, they prefer international brands. And they love authentic stories and this authenticity of our brand.
Okay.
They love. Well, I hope they love.
On past experience here, I think we'll have to do like another episode next year and you can tell me exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Well, we sold out everywhere.
So we're launching in China with the distributor next month. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So it's really exciting. And
all from an Irish company based here in Ireland.
Yes.
Fantastic. Sonia, thank you so much for coming in. Pleasure.
Thanks, Gary.
One thing we do is we ask people to recommend a book and then we give it away.
Okay.
So it can be any kind of book you like. So all people have to do to win it is to tag myself and yourself on social media. It can be Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, wherever. Tag Pestle & Mortar as well. And they'll win the book.
Okay.
We'll give it away to one person. So what book did you love reading that had some sort of impact on you?
I think Michelle Obama's book, Becoming. I think it was really impactful because I think that you really see that she is truly a real person, you know, and, you know, she down to, you know, buying the hats for her kids before the inauguration or, you know, last minute shopping to dress her kids, down to the supports that she, how much work she did for her husband, you know, with her husband. And I think it just really shows that even though she is so powerful and successful, she is real and she is grounded.
I've seen a lot of parallels here. Sonia, where can people learn a little bit more about either yourself and then Pestle & Mortar as well?
So on our website. So we have an Instagram handle. I have my own LinkedIn profile.
Perfect.
And Twitter as well.
Great. I'll link everything down below anyway. Sonia, thank you so much. Pleasure.
Thanks a million, Gary.
And that was episode 21 of The Entrepreneur Experiment. Thank you so much for listening. As Sonia said, if you want to win a copy of the Michelle Obama book, Becoming, just tag me, Mr. Gary Fox, and Pestle & Mortar on your social media posts. So it can be on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, wherever you like. Just make sure you tag us and I'll announce the winner next week. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next Thursday at 6 a.m. for episode 22. Talk to you then.